Hello, everybody. Welcome to our Flash Questions minisode. This is our first one, so we're pretty excited about it. Matt just got back from tour this week, and I'm actually going to hand it over to him. And
I'm injured, Tim. I'm broken.
This tour did a number on you, I guess.
Our bodies are amazing. On Wednesday of last week, we were playing our second show in a run of six straight. When you're in a band, you refer to days on and then days off using unique terms. So we typically do five or six on, one off. Five or six on, okay, meaning five or six shows in a row, and then one off meaning we have a day off. Well, the last 2 weeks were six on, one off, six on, one off. The last stretch, six on, one off, day two of that stretch was in Norfolk, Virginia, I believe. Somewhere coming up the East Coast. Still had another four to go. Playing the show, it was a Wednesday night, fifth song in, Marianas Trench. I was just like, boom, that feels weird. Something in my neck just, I don't know what just happened. So, okay, I pushed through the show. Thursday it hurt, played the show. Friday it didn't hurt too badly. Saturday, Sunday, finished the tour in New York City. Came home Monday morning and I was in pain. Tour's over, jeez, and I realized how amazing our bodies are. My body did not let me know how much pain I was in until I was done working because I had to play the shows. And once I was done and the pressure was, you know, the pressure was off and there's nothing more to be done, and I'm home, I just exhaled and boom, I feel all the pain. So tried to sleep Monday night. Didn't really sleep too much. Woke up Tuesday morning and I call my doctor. I'm like, listen, I need to come in. Like, I can't afford to just be out for the count. Something's wrong with my neck and my back. And it's not just like a, you know, it's not just like, oh, I'm a little bit sore. It's like, I can't, yeah, sleep well. So I went in and she walks in. My doctor walks in. She goes, so what's going on? I was like, well, just played 43 shows, 54 days, pretty intense show. Slept on a bus in a bunk. And she's like, oh, well, that all makes sense. You're probably in need of some medicine. And so we figured out I have a severe muscle spasm, which when I hear the word spasm, I hear like a twitching, right? That's, I think of something, yeah, twitching. But actually she explained that it's a knot and your muscles and nerves are obviously sort of intertwined. And so this is affecting my nerve that also runs down my right arm. And because of that, she was like, oh, I'm kind of on the fence about what I want to give you, but you know what? Let's just do it. So she gave me a pretty strong steroid and like a sleeping aid, like a muscle relaxer. And last night I actually slept okay.
Okay.
But yeah, it's amazing what our bodies were able to do, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe, mm-hmm, it's just our brains, like we're just able to fight through something if we know we have to do it. And you don't realize, right, how much your body was fighting until the pressure's off. And yeah, man, it's just crazy. So I'm feeling a little bit better now. The tour is over and I'm done. I'm home now.
So yeah.
No more bus generator.
That's right. Welcome home.
Thank you.
I'm happy you're home.
Yeah, so I just wanted to start off this flash question. Each week we're going to, every other week we're doing flash questions, and to open up the flash question segment, we want to do a little Bible study. We'll go over a Bible verse, and then we'll connect it to something that is relevant in our lives. So something I realized since I've been home only 2 days now is people are busy. I mean, mm-hmm, we're busy on tour, we're on the move, but when you stop to talk to someone, there's a sense of, okay, this person is interested in what I have to say. They're putting aside whatever responsibilities they have, and we're just going to have a conversation and talk. Well, at home, what I've realized is, I guess people's schedules are a little more insane, but there's not that sense of, hey, I have time to, you know, have this conversation. It's like, oh, I could tell you have somewhere to be. And
yeah,
so I've noticed how busy people are, and I've also noticed how much anxiety and pressure and stress people are under. And I guess I only realized that because I've been away for 7 weeks and the environment I was in was a little bit more laid back. And so I'm comparing that environment, tour environment, to being at home. And it's, I'm kind of shocked actually at how I've had gone out with a couple people, had a few conversations since I've been home. And it's just like, man, people are under a lot of stress, whether it's parenting or whether it's, you know, finances. It's just been a little bit more obvious to me. So I was thinking about, is living a life under, you know, immense pressure and dealing with daily anxiety and stress, is that really the best that we could do? Not only as Christians, but just, you know, is that really what we're supposed to be doing with our lives? And a verse that I've been writing on drumsticks and, you know, just that I signed with my autograph for a number of years is Matthew 6:33. So I was thinking about this morning. And I'm just going to read that. The headline.
Figures you choose the book of Matthew.
Yeah, it's a little vain, isn't it? The headline for this segment, or for this sort of section of Matthew 6, it says, "The Cure for Anxiety." The Bible that I'm reading from was given to me by a friend named Brandon Langford. He does a lot of the art for ABR. And it is, it's called the Christian Standard Bible. Have you ever heard of that translation?
No.
This Bible
is pretty cool.
This Bible is really cool. It's, I spent like an hour just reading the introduction to the Bible and how it's laid out and how it breaks everything down. The Bible itself is called He Reads Truth Bible. He Reads Truth Bible. The translation is Christian Standard Bible. So anyway, if you're looking for a Bible, this is a pretty neat translation, and it's helpful if you suck at reading the Bible and keeping it a consistent part of your day, because there's just some plans throughout the text that you can stick with. So anyway, yeah. Matthew 6:33, it says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things will be provided for you." The verse after it says, "Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." I remember the first time my friend Brian Summers actually showed me this verse. It stuck with me because it seems to be the most applicable verse from day to day, year to year, in my life. It's just stuck with me. And I guess the reason for that is because I typically don't seek first the kingdom of God. In other words, I don't go to God first with my stress or my anxiety or my issues. I go elsewhere, or I just don't think about it. But if we're going to listen to what this text says, it says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." Yeah. And then what does it say? "All of these other things will be provided for you." What is that referring to? The text prior to this verse talks about the things that you worry about in your life. What are you going to eat? What are you going to drink? You know, what about your body? What are you going to wear? It says, "Isn't life more than food and the body more than clothing?" And then it throws in this like very stark reminder saying, "Consider the birds of the sky. They don't sow or reap or gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Aren't you worth more than they? And can any of you add one moment to his life span by worrying?"
Yeah.
So coming home from tour, I understand everyone is busy. I think a good reminder is to remember that we need to go to God first before we really try to alleviate the anxiety and the stress in our lives with other fun activities, entertainment, you know, whatever it is. The Bible says there's one place to go first, and if we go to him first, everything else will be provided for us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I love that verse. It's funny because that one's actually stuck with me over the years as well, and partly because I have a couple friends who actually have it tattooed on them.
Oh, yeah?
So it just keeps coming up. But yeah, really good verse. There was some point, I want to say, think I was 17, maybe 18, but doesn't really matter. And I was praying about this exact thing for a really long time, just like stress and anxiety, depression, things like that. It was a rough period of my life. I must have been 17 because I had just graduated high school and I had just actually left my band that I had been in for the 2 or 3 years prior. A lot of things were changing basically in my life.
Right.
And it was a stressful time. And I basically came to this conclusion in prayer. It kind of hit me pretty hard, actually, and it stuck with me. Has stressing over something benefited you in any way?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were, just really stressed about a situation and pacing, freaking out, whatever, did that actually benefit that situation at all? Did it help you, I don't know, in any way?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is no. Stressing over something does not help anything at all. It's just a negative side effect to whatever is happening.
And alongside of that, my brother Jesse is going to school to be an NP, nurse practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how the number one killer is stress.
Yeah.
Stress is terrible for your body. It puts tremendous stress on your vitals,
mm-hmm.
on every part of your body. Something happens inside of your body when you are stressing. And if you're consistently stressed, it's very, very, very hard for your body to operate at full capacity.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right. When you're pacing, when you're freaking out, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? What is actually changing about your situation?
Nothing.
In a positive way, nothing.
Yeah.
What's changing negatively? Well, nothing to that particular cause of the stress, but it's certainly setting your body back a couple steps and probably affecting your mindset towards what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And not in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. You kind of touched on it a little bit. There is like a biological thing that happens. Your body creates chemicals with different emotions that make your body feel a certain way. You know, like fear or surprise can release this like fight or flight chemical that puts your body into like super strength, like ready to go, ready to fight or flee mode, where you're actually almost like superhuman in some ways, or like,
which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing.
It's something your body is built for.
Yeah,
but not all the time.
But stress does something similar in that it produces a chemical that actually isn't helpful to the body at all. it is just it's toxic.
Yeah, and I think just in conclusion, I think that it would be good. So I have a challenge. My challenge is to remove one thing from your daily schedule. Just one thing. And here's why. So when I came home from this tour, I had mulch delivered to my house and to my farmhouse. And my goal was, I'm going to get my house mulched. I'm going to get my farmhouse mulched. I'm going to get my farmhouse rented out. I have a few other jobs I want to get done. All right. I got home and boom, my neck and my back were like, you're not going anywhere and you're not doing anything. And so I'm sitting here thinking about it going, well, how important is it that I actually get this mulching done today and all at once?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really important at all, actually, because it can happen eventually and it won't really change anything if it happens today or next week.
Yeah.
So what that did was all of a sudden I had figured it's going to take me 8 hours to do my house. Well, all of a sudden I now have 8 hours of freedom. So think about that in smaller terms. If you have one thing in your day that takes 10 minutes, that's really not all that important. It doesn't have to happen every day. Just get rid of that one thing. And all of a sudden you have 10 minutes to just sit, breathe,
right,
pray, read the Bible, or just have a meaningful conversation with someone that you otherwise wouldn't have had time to do.
Yeah.
Time to have. So my challenge is think of one thing that's really not all that significant, all that important, or all that valuable in your life, and try and just see if you can delete it from your checklist, even if it's not a daily thing. and use that freedom, that time, to do something else or to do nothing. Because we fill our schedules, at least here in Lancaster County, we fill our schedules with so much. Everyone's so busy. And oftentimes we just create the schedule because we don't want to have time, whether it's we don't want to have time to think about what's actually important, or we find a lot of purpose and identity in our work at the end of the day. I know I definitely deal with that. And a good example is a garden, right? A garden is a labor of love. It takes a tremendous amount of time and energy to maintain, to plant the produce, to weed, and then to harvest the produce. And there's just a tremendous amount of time. And you go to the grocery store, you buy produce, it's pretty darn cheap. I mean, it's like you could buy tomatoes for a couple dollars. And yeah, they're not all that hard to grow, but think of the amount of time you're investing into that. Yes, it's fun for a lot of people, but if you have no time left at the end of the day, maybe think about downsizing the garden. it's simple things like that, you know. It's nothing like you know, too profound or big thinking. It's just very simple decisions you make to free up your day.
And
that's a challenge to myself. You know, there are things that are important, and then there are things that are not very important. And it's in reading Matthew 6, it points straight to the part of my heart that says, all right, you know, where am I going with the free time that I do have? And am I taking this to God first, or am I choosing to stay really, really, really busy and not have any free time?
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. I like that challenge. I'm going to be taking that on for sure. I need to. I'm way too busy. I think part of it for me is that, like, I feel like if I'm not doing something, because I have so many responsibilities, I feel like if I'm not doing something, I'm wasting time, which is not a good way to look at it.
That's so true. I mean, you're a dad, you're a husband, you have a pretty demanding job. You have this podcast on the side.
Yeah.
As long as your personal challenge isn't to get rid of Holy Ghost notes, because that's that would be unfortunate.
Yeah, well, I was going through the list in my head. I was like, well, I can't really not take care of my son. I can't really, like, not do the dishes or the laundry. I could cut out playing drums, but that, you know, defeats the purpose. I could not do this podcast, but then there's going to be a lot of people really disappointed about that. So,
yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. That's good. Good stuff. Well,
yeah.
Speaking of people who might be disappointed if we had stopped doing this podcast, let's jump into some flash questions here and give the people what they want.
All right. Boom.
Go. First question of the very first Flash Questions minisode is from at @JimRat_Flavco, FLVCKO. All right, here we go. He asks, how do you overcome the fear of playing drums in front of hundreds of people?
Good question. I don't think you ever lose the adrenaline rush that you get when you step out on stage and you sit down at the kit. And I've heard it actually said before that if you do lose that adrenaline rush and you don't feel excited, a little bit of sweat on your palms, that little bit of like, I'm kind of nervous, then if you lose that, then you probably shouldn't be doing it anymore. I think that was Jordan Mancino from As They Die, and years and years and years ago we were talking about this, because I used to talk to him like, man, how do you deal with headlining these, you know, 1500 cap shows and playing for an hour and 30 minutes? Like, how do you deal with that stress and that pressure? And he's like, well, you always have a little bit of it, and it's actually a good thing because you get out there and you're ready to just hammer down.
Yeah.
But it is important to manage that adrenaline. And so here's my advice. When I'm home, I practice a lot. What practicing does is it teaches your muscles to remember what you're playing, so that when you get out on stage, you have the faith in your muscle memory to fulfill the task. If I don't practice a lot at home, then how am I going to get out there on stage and have any amount of confidence that I'm going to be able to do this well? So you practice a lot in your off time so that when you're on stage, you don't have to worry about the fact that you're playing these drum parts. You're just able to sit back and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the most effective way for me to deal with any anxiety or any pressure or any butterflies about going out on stage and playing in front of a lot of people. Because if I have that feeling, which I do from time to time, I'll just remind myself, you know, whether I'm saying it out loud or just internally, Matt, you've practiced a lot. You can do this. Just relax and trust your muscle memory to do the job for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I actually don't have any additional advice, so. I've never had, like, stage fright, per se, like, where I don't think I've ever been, like, nervous to get up in front of people, which is really weird. People ask me, like,
really?
How do you get up in front of people and do that? Well, I was, like, I did musicals and plays when I was a kid, and I don't know, like, it just, I never got nervous. I got excited, you know, excited to be up in front of people, but I never got, like, nervous where I would, like, forget what I was doing or, you know, in music, like, forget what I'm supposed to play because I'm too nervous. You know, I never had that, and I feel fortunate not to, but, yeah, adrenaline's a good way to put it. Like, you're always excited, and there's always, like, this, like, wow, like, look at all those people out there, and it's pretty cool. I would say, though, I think the closest thing I've ever gotten to, like, nervous was I played this show at a performing arts center. We opened up for that band Live. I don't know if you've heard of Live. They were big in the 90s. Had that song I Alone, which I was a fan of. And I think it was something about playing with this iconic band that was, I don't know, got me a little bit more nervous than I normally would be, I guess. And, you know, saying there was like, you know, a couple thousand people there. But I think Matt hit it on the head. Like, it was more just, you know, I knew the songs. I knew that I knew the songs. Just go out there and have fun was kind of my approach to it.
Yeah, that's really what it is. Go out there and have fun.
Yep.
My drum tech, Spencer, on this last tour was reminding me I was screwing up certain parts of the show. And he's like, Matt, just remembered, like, drums are an instrument that a lot of people, they don't hear it the way that you do. Mm-hmm. You're hearing, okay, that missed kick hit or that double snare hit when there should be one, but it's just, it's rhythmic, and it doesn't have to always be, you know, precise to the extent that every hit is there. Mm-hmm. And that helped me out because it's like, okay, I can kind of sit back and just play the drums, and I'm not hitting every stroke perfectly like I'm in the studio maybe, but thinking in terms of the audience, that's not incredibly important to everybody there.
Right.
So also have that mindset when you get up there. Not everyone that's listening to you play has the mindset that you do, that maybe you have to play perfectly.
Yeah.
Just go up there and do the best job you can and have fun. And like I said, if you've put in the time at home practicing, you can trust that your body will do the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what people pick up on live more so than what they hear is the energy that people have. And a lot of that is really just from like the front man or the singer or the vocalist. But I think the entire band, the way that the band is communicating on stage and the energy that they bring to the stage, I think is almost more important at times.
Absolutely.
Good question.
Yes.
Our next question is from @samuels.derek, and he asks, what's your favorite movie and why?
You take this one, Tim.
Oh, that's such a tough question. I don't know. Like, my favorite movie, like, switches probably weekly, not because I'm watching a ton of movies, but just because I appreciate so many different things about different movies. I'm a suspense buff. I gotta say, I don't know if this is like my all-time favorite movie, but definitely of the last number of years, probably Inception. Mm. I love Christopher Nolan. I love his writing style and how he directs films. And Inception, I probably watched it like four or five times, and I don't watch many movies that many times, so that one's, I'm gonna stick with that one for this. If you ask me tomorrow, it might be different, but
yeah, it might be different. I would say mine is Gladiator. Ooh, still to this movie. Day. Yes. And my sister Joanna knows how much I like that movie, and she recently texted me a screenshot of Gladiator 2.
Okay, there's a second one coming out.
Well, that's what I heard. That's what I saw. But at this, who knows? I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard anything since that announcement, which was probably 6 months ago.
Okay.
I love Gladiator because I have this weird thing. When I watch a movie where there's this sense of honor, like this sense of someone laying down their life for the sake of other people around them or just, you know, fighting to the end, I get... It's funny. I told Jake about this and the singer from my band, and he gives me a hard time about it all the time because I don't think about the fact that I'm doing this, but I nod my head down as if to acknowledge the person in the movie and as if they know that I'm doing that. Like I'm like nodding my head down, you know, up and down a couple times towards the TV, and I didn't even know I did it. Jake's like, what are you doing? What do you mean? What am I doing? I'm like, he's like, you're like nodding, you're nodding your head up and down towards this mirror. I'm like, what? No, I'm not. And he's like, yeah, you just did this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I do that.
That's pretty funny.
That's the movie that kind of started that, probably just this idea of yes, like, thank you, you know, I owe you honor and respect. And, man, that movie in combination with the soundtrack, you know, it has Enya in it, and it's, the acting is just
That's an amazing
awesome.
Movie. Actually, at some point, if you had asked me what my favorite movie was, that has definitely been the answer more than once. it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Next question is from @NorrisJosiah, and he's asking, what's your favorite worship song? Another tough question. I'll field that one over to you.
Yeah. Actually, so like you said about movies, my favorite worship song changes as there are new songs that come out. Right now it is Goodness of God, which is by, I believe it was written by Bethel.
Okay.
The song's so sweet. It's called Goodness of God. You can look it up on Spotify or YouTube. It's by Bethel Music. And I've seen some covers that I also really like. There's another worship song I also want to mention. I watched a video of it yesterday being sang by a gentleman in Ireland, and he had like this several hundred person choir. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
It was so cool because I've teared up listening to this song, and there's probably other people, but the guy that was singing the song and playing piano and had this choir behind him, he actually couldn't get all the words out at the one point because choir joined in, and you could tell it just leveled him for a couple seconds. So it's a song called Is He Worthy by Andrew Peterson.
Okay.
And what happens in this song is you hear the main line. So the first line is, do you feel the world is broken? And then in parentheses, the choir would sing, we do. Do you feel the shadows deepen? The choir sings, we do. But do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through? We do. Do you wish that you could see it all made new? We do. And then it just continues on, and the chorus says, is anyone worthy? Is anyone whole? Is anyone able to break the seal and open the scroll? The Lion of Judah who conquered the grave, he is David's root and the lamb who died to ransom the slave. Followed by, is he worthy? Is he worthy of all blessing and honor and glory? Is he worthy of this? And the choir says, he is. And so, yeah, if you want to try to find this, maybe search for Is He Worthy Choir Ireland or something like that. You should be able to find this. I think it's a fairly, like, you know, viral video. It came out.
That's cool. Yeah, I'll check it out. That sounds awesome.
Well, here, I just found it. Cool. From Andrew Peterson. Andrew Peterson, he sang at the Getty Music Worship Conference. Just search for Andrew Peterson, Is He Worthy? You'll be able to find it.
Cool. Yeah, I'll check that out. This is a tough one. The whole time Matt was talking, I was trying to think, what is my favorite worship song? So one that's probably been my favorite for a really long time, and that's just, it always gets me every time it's sang, and that's Come Thou Fount. I know it's like super old, but man, it's just something about like the honesty of that song. Yeah, it's just so good.
I've never even heard of it.
You never heard Come Thou Fount?
I don't even know what word you're saying right now.
You know it. You've definitely heard it.
What is the last word you're saying, and how?
Fount. Come thou fount of every blessing.
Are you sure that's a word in English?
It's not. It's like King James. I don't even know. It's. I think it's just, it's something, it's like one of those songs, like it's just like anointed, I guess. So when it's sung in whatever capacity, whoever's singing it, it always like has some element of. Yeah, exactly. But more recently, I'd say I'm really digging Corey Asbury's Reckless Love. In fact, I'll probably be covering it at some point.
Really?
Just because I like it a lot. Yeah.
I covered that song when I went to Latin America with Zildjian.
Oh, really?
I heard that song. I'm like, wow, kind of the same thing. I have to write a drum cover. And yeah. I've never spent so much time on a stupid drum cover as I did on that song.
Really? Wow, that's cool. Yeah. Well, maybe I won't cover it anymore because it's not going to compare.
My cover's not great. I think you can do better for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good song too. And then I could list another 10 songs that are technically my favorite worship song, but I'm not going to do that. So, next question is from at Morning Sax.
Nice.
I love it. do you have any fan stories where a fan was a little too crazy or got out of hand?
So people will come up to the merch table they used to come up to the merch table. Now just they come up to the barricade or a meet and greet. And it used to be the case that someone would say, can you sign my arm or, you know, can you sign my forehead? And that's always like, I guess. And then what sometimes happens is we'll sign it. And the person will say, great, I'm going to get it tattooed on my arm tomorrow. And it's like, what? No, you can't do that. That's my name. And I didn't even, the Sharpie kind of sucked and my signature doesn't look good. And it's my name. Like you can't do that. You're not going to like me forever. You probably won't even like me next year. So that's always one of the most shocking things that people do.
That's funny.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to get your name tattooed on my body. As flattering, I guess, as it is, it's also, I'd feel terrible because I just, would you get my name tattooed on your arm?
No.
Yes, me. It's, and you really like me, so it's.
Yeah. I've thought about getting like a tattoo for my son.
Of my name?
No. Yeah. It's actually going to be a tattoo of my son with your name tattooed on him. It's going to be pretty crazy.
Oh, I thought you were going to get my signature tattooed on your son's arm.
On my son. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like at age too. 2.5, like you're going to get it done soon.
Can you come sign my son real quick so we can get that done?
I'd be happy
My wife doesn't even want me to get like her name or anything on me. So I don't know.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, she's smart, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. She just thinks it's weird. I'm not a big portrait fan either. Like getting people's portraits tattooed on you, it's just kind of weird. I don't know.
What tattoo would you get if you were to get one?
Probably like the Beatles or something. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Like their name or lyrics or their faces
if I was going to get like a portrait, it'd probably be like the Beatles or something.
Oh, but, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. If I have a bunch of tattoos. They're usually scripture. That's the only thing I can think of that's really going to stick with me.
Yeah.
I have a drum tattoo as well. That's something that probably won't ever change.
That's cool.
Things like that.
I could see myself getting one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be something that like you're not going to regret down the road.
Oh, actually, I just thought of something. We were in Fort Lauderdale. No, we were in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and We have a lot of like military, you know, whether in the Army or Marines, or the Navy that come out to our shows. We've talked about that a little bit. We really appreciate their service. We really appreciate their support. And oftentimes it's shocking the kind of stuff that they bring us for us to have. So we were in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and this one takes the cake. This guy was in, I don't know, he might have been in the Army. And he was deployed, I think, twice to Iraq. Played our music a lot. He walks up and he hands me this bag, and inside the bag were seven medals. Seven medals. And the one, it's hard to even talk about because of how, it's hard for me to understand why he would give this to us, but the one medal was a Purple Heart.
What?
Which, you know, as you know, it's a medal that's awarded to, you know, a member of the armed forces who has been wounded by, you know, an instrument of war in the hands of the enemy. So, this guy gave us these seven medals, and one was a Purple Heart. And it was just like, oh, we can't take that. And he said, you have to have it. I want you guys to have it. And it's like, well, we didn't do anything to earn this, you know? And he said, well, you guys were with me. I played your music all the time. Wow. So that would be more so on the, I don't know how to accept this flattering side of the scale.
Yeah. Dang, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
So on the subject of the military, we had a couple shout outs on episode 10 to Zach Inch and Andy Wachowski, and they actually asked some questions, and I thought it'd be appropriate to answer their questions. Zach asks, Matt, can you take us through a day in the life on a world tour?
Yeah, it's a great question. My schedule is typically the same, whether it is in the U.S. or Europe or Australia. The only difference would be how we travel. So I'll just go over the North American tour schedule. We just did the Constellations 10-year anniversary tour. I'll usually wake up pretty late compared to what I wake up at home. The reason for that is I would consider what we do second shift work. In other words, we start around 2 and we aren't done really working until 11 or 11:30. Mm-hmm. And then you have to wind down, and by the time you're in bed, it's like 2 or 3.
Yeah.
So I try to sleep late. I wake up, I make breakfast on the bus. In North America, we have a skillet. We have what's called Cafe BR. Cafe BR.
I like it.
And make breakfast just like you would at home, you know, eggs,
man, who
bagel.
Came up with that? That sounds almost as bad as Holy Ghost Notes.
yeah. It's definitely on par. breakfast is always how I start my day before I go and do anything else. Once I'm done with that, I'll go into the venue, shower, clean up, get ready for sound check. We do sound check around 2 to 2:30 every day. Usually, our sound check is usually one or two songs. I wish that we could oftentimes play longer, because me having a little bit of time on the kit outside of the show is actually really important for me mentally and also physically, just to get comfortable with everything. The drums are set up the same way every day, but that doesn't mean the room sounds the same or the stage feels the same. And so the more I can play, the better. We typically do one song just to make sure our ears work and make sure our front of house guy is comfortable with the room. And typically I'll be like, hey, can we play one more? Or our front of house guy will say that. Yeah. After that's done, we wait until meet and greet starts. Meet and greet is time in which fans that pay additional money can come in early. They get early access to the venue. We sign and autograph and take pictures. After that, we'll do dinner, and then we usually play anywhere between 8:50 and 9:05. Show's over around 10:30. Talk and hang out, clean up, and then head to bed around 2 or 3. So it's
day.
The schedule, the term that we used to use a lot is hurry up and wait. And that expression is so true about tour. It's like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, sound check. Okay, now wait. Hurry up, hurry up. Guys, we got meet and greet. Come on, 5 minutes. Okay, now wait.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of the way every day feels. There's pockets of time throughout the day, but you always have something else on your agenda.
Right.
And then once the show's done, then you can finally clock out for the day.
Yeah. So you probably don't get much time to really explore the places you visit unless you have a day off, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you what's changed things, though. Have you heard of those Lime or Bird scooters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're all over the country.
Yeah.
And as much as people that live in a city that has them hate them, being on tour, it's a pretty nice thing to use. I probably spent $200 just on scooters on this tour because it's just an easy way to get out. You know, they're everywhere.
You should just buy one.
I could have bought one for $300. So maybe I should have.
Next tour.
next to tour. One.
Bring it on the bus with you.
Just throw it in the bay.
There you go. Cool. Good question, Zach. And Andy asks, do you and Matt think the best drummers, in your opinion, are linear-based?
That's a strange question. I don't know how to answer that question because I would say the best drummers in the world are able to play linear-style drumming. I guess we have to break down what linear-based means first, mm-hmm. before we jump into that question. So linear is where you're playing one instrument or one limit of time. And so you could be a beginner and learn a linear beat actually pretty easily. You could just play a single stroke roll and you're playing a linear sticking. Mm-hmm. So you could be a beginner and play in a linear fashion. The best drummers in the world are obviously implementing the most intense independence, which is what linear drumming is. It's just...
yeah.
It just requires an enormous amount of independence at the highest levels. I would say if you are the best drummers in the world, you have mastered linear drumming. I wouldn't say that makes you an expert drummer, however, being able to play in a linear fashion. There are just so many components to it. It's almost like, you know, do you think the best pickup truck for the money and the entire world is a Ford F-150. It's like, well, I don't know. It kind of depends on what you need the truck for. Like for me, yes, because I like Ford. I like the way it's set up. I like the interior, I like the durability. But for someone else, it's like, no, definitely the Ram because the interior is a lot nicer. So it's
right.
That's very subjective.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of my favorite drummers are linear based in a sense that a lot of what they play or work into their writing is linear in nature. But I think that the best drummers out there, definitely they have the ability to play linear, but like Matt said, they're I think the best drummers out there are the ones that have mastered like the feel of a song, you know, can write and play to anything. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what it is. I think most of them aren't necessarily linear based, but they do have, they're grounded in drum fundamentals. So they know how to, navigate, I guess.
That's a good way to put it. And once again, that's pretty subjective because you think that that an important element is one thing and I might think it's something else. You know, like I was watching videos of Eric Moore this morning. If you like really fast, incredibly smooth drumming, he's going to be one of your favorites and he's going to be one of the best in the world. If you like, if you're more interested in, let's see, like fast double bass and intricate rhythms, then Tomas Haig from Meshuggah is probably good, you know, probably going to be one of your favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some people would say Travis Barker is the best drummer in the world. I would not agree.
A lot of people would say that. Yeah.
But I think he's an amazing drummer. But yeah, like Eric Moore, I was just watching a video. He's like playing in the dark with like these neon glow sticks or something like that. It was crazy.
I saw that. Yeah.
But like that video was incredible. And I was like, dude, this guy is like up there with the best. And yeah, 100%. he's gospel, he's linear based. So I don't know. Yeah. Well, it's all opinion.
Kind of along with what you said too, Tim, about Travis Barker, a lot of people would say he's the best drummer in the world, but alongside of that opinion is the fact that he is one of the most popular drummers and household names in the world. So,
and I've seen him play, and I actually think that he's an amazing drummer, way beyond me, but he's sloppy at times. And like sloppiness for me would cut you down a few notches.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He has very he has a really strong marching foundation. Mm-hmm. So he has a good sense of rudiments.
Yeah.
But his technique is really strange.
Right. He's really high up on the sticks and his form isn't all that great. But like, yeah, he plays some amazing stuff. And I think his writing is definitely up there with some of the greats.
And that's what I was about to say. The stuff that he's written would qualify him to be one of the best, because mm-hmm. what I think one of the greatest drummers in the world, to be in that category, to be even considered for that list, you have to have drum parts or songs that you've written that are just like, you just know who the drummer is without hearing it. That's yeah. part of that classification. He's one of them, 100%. He doesn't have everything that I think you'd find in the world's best drummer, but I think he's one of them personally.
Yeah, I agree. Good question. And our last question for today, I got an email from Dana Minton, who I guess met you, Matt, after the show in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Said that you had recommended sending a question over. So she's asking, in your touring in other countries, do you connect with many fans through the faith message in your music, or just through the music itself?
100%.
Do you find many fans in other countries who are Christian believers?
Yeah, 100%. Yes, in both cases. Cool. There is something very, very powerful about music. And what it does is, I don't know most of the people that I meet on tour. However, the conversations we have are the kinds of conversations that someone who has been friends with someone else for a long time would have, and only in that case. And so what happens is, the lyrics that I write and Jake writes and Brent writes, it speaks through the music. It speaks right into the heart of people all around the world. And there's this idea of, oh my gosh, that person understands me. That person knows me. I feel like I can talk to them about what I'm going through, or what I disagree on, or what I believe in. And it's very humbling, because, you know, anyone can write lyrics for a band. Anyone can start a band. You have to be pretty fortunate and extremely blessed to have a successful band. But here we are, you know, we're the luckiest guys in the world. And the most valuable conversations I have on tour are the ones where someone's saying, I was lost. I didn't know what I was doing in life. I met a guy a couple months ago who was like, hey, I was addicted to drugs. I went to jail. I was suicidal. I lost my family. And I heard your music. And for some reason, it picked him up off the ground. He got out of jail.
Wow.
He got clean, and he got his family back. And he was standing
That's
there at
crazy.
The show just like, thank you. He was thanking me. And I said, thank you for thanking me. I realized that our music played a part in like inspiring you and directing you and focusing you on what's important in life. But it doesn't have anything to do with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just humbled by the fact that God used me in some way, you know, the lyrics I wrote, or the drumming, whatever it was, or just that conversation to help this guy out a little bit. Church happens every night on tour in those venues. Church certainly has nothing to do with the way the building looks or the name of the pastor. We see church happen every night, and it's there on the floor. It's in the barricade. It's having a conversation with someone you've never met, who's spilling their guts and telling you about the life they used to have and the life they have now.
Right.
Or the life they have now and the life that they want to have in the future. And music is that conduit that creates the space for that kind of conversation. God, I believe, is behind all of it.
Yeah, that is super cool. I was just thinking about something that you reminded me of. I was just thinking about this the other day. I was watching a video on America's Got Talent or something like that. I never actually watched the show, but I always see the clips come up, and I usually watch them. And there was someone that was doing this like sand art, and it was actually it was super cool. But as I was going through it, I was like, wow, this is like really powerful and like emotional. And then I was thinking, but how is sand making me feel this way? And then I realized the music was what was making me feel that way. The sand was a proponent, but it wasn't the thing that was making me feel that way. If you had taken the music out, it, you know, I'd be like, oh, someone's drawing in sand.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point.
And then I was realizing, like, as the train of thought continued, like, my wife and her family, they like watching, like, So You Think You Can Dance. And dancing is obviously, you know, amazing to see, and I cannot dance at all, so I have a lot of appreciation for it. But, mm-hmm. like, without music, it's almost awkward. You know, music is the other piece that makes you feel that, you know, this dance is powerful, but it's not as powerful, or the thing that's really driving this dance home is the music behind it. So what you are dealing with here, Matt, is A, music, which is one of the most powerful things, I think. I'm biased, mm-hmm. but I think it's one of the most powerful things that we as humans have to work with. You see it in movies. You know, the music is what's really driving these emotional parts or these powerful parts. It's basically helping you determine how to feel when something is happening.
That's a great point.
But you also have the other most powerful thing that we as humans have to access, which is God. So you're taking music and Christianity or faith and basically merging the two.
That's a great point. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. It's, man, feel very fortunate to be in that position.
That's cool. It's definitely not something anyone should take lightly.
No.
Yeah, got a little off topic there, but. Cool. Well, that's all the questions I have for today.
Great.
I think we had some really good ones, and we were able to get into it a little bit more with this format. So
yeah, great. So look forward to another yeah. episode next week, and continue to send in flash questions if you have any questions for Tim or for myself, or just about anything you've heard thus far or would like to hear moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Email us at mattandtim@theholyghostnotes.com. Or use the hashtag Holy Ghost Notes on social media, or direct message us on Facebook or Instagram. And
lots of ways to find us.
Plenty of ways. That's right. So thanks all right. For listening, and hope you liked our first minisode.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. See ya.
Peace.